The combination sadist and masochist is perfect. And many sadists would be quite reluctant if the victim really didn't like participating in this at all. And so there's the joke of the masochist asking the sadist to beat him, and he says, "I won't." But what happens here is that pain and the attendant convulsive behavior of the organism is associated with the erotic. A different value is given to the same symptoms, as, say, it is common in France to get a young woman really aroused, you know? And she will say, "Tue-moi, tue-moi, kill me, kill me." As if to know, to go as far as you can in throwing yourself away to somebody else. You know, do anything you want to. And in that abandon, you see, there is the possibility that this, an undulation of feeling, which is total orgiastic feeling, may take over. And in that feeling, you see, you are one with what is happening completely. And that's what everybody, as it were, finally aspires to. So, therefore, the masochist in particular is a person who has learned throughout life to defend himself against pain by eroticizing pain. Now, do you understand how, therefore, different valuations can be put on one and the same vibration? We see, don't we, all that we experience is understandable as a spectrum of vibrations. There are different kinds of spectra. There's the spectrum of light, there's the spectrum of sound. We can also think of spectra of smells, of tactile feelings, of emotions, and so on, all down the line. We are, as it were, living in the midst of a woven tapestry of many dimensions in which the warps and the woofs are all these different spectra of various kinds of vibrations. And as on the loom, the warp crosses the woof, and if you didn't have one, you wouldn't have the other. It takes two to reveal the pattern. So see yourselves as patterns in a weaving system. You wouldn't be here if it weren't for the interlocking of all these different spectra of dimensions. So then, here they go. And these things are vibrating. Now, when it reaches a certain point, you say, "Oh, that's too much." When it reaches another point, you say, "It's not enough. Why, there's nothing here. I don't feel a thing. No, I'm going to go to sleep." But on the other end, you say, "No, no, 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 you're going far enough. If you go any further, that's going to tear things apart. I can't withhold this tension." See? Now, so some people will say, "All right, now relax, relax, relax. Take it easy, take it easy." But often you see the point is you can't do that. So then, what I would say to the person who cannot relax, I will stress his tension. Go the other way. In other words, go with the line of least resistance. Say, "Okay, you're tense about all this. Now let's say, really tense. Let's scream. No, 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 no." See, you get violent inside. This is not to happen. See? But so that one way or the other, you see, it doesn't matter which you go, you begin to get into this thing. Which is what is happening when the boat of life begins really to rock. Get rocking with it by whatever way is open. But you are not going to force the issue here. Instead of saying to you, "You should be doing it another way than you're doing it," I would be saying, now find out the way you must do it and go that way. Now, this is a general principle of an art. And we will find there is a kind of, there are limits to this art and how it can be used and so forth. But once the general principles are clear, there aren't many serious problems left. That if you begin to look at it in that way, you will begin to realize that ecstasy, by one road or another, is inevitable. That indeed ecstasy is, in a way, the nature of existence. There is a universe for the simple reason that it's ecstatic. What else is all this fireworks about? It is just like music in this ecstatic thing going off. And you have to be certainly careful in a little way here that any initiation into a deep wisdom is apt at first to demotivate you. You think, what the hell am I doing? And all these projects and building this up and that up, or doing something to save the world, or so on and so forth. Well, why? The whole thing is nonsense. Yes. If you stick there, that's what they call in Mahayana Buddhism the Pratyeka Buddha. That means the private Buddha, as distinct from Bodhisattva, who comes back into everyday life, as they say, for the liberation of all other sentient beings. Because when you know that all this is all right anyway, and that the situation is inevitable ecstasy, I mean, you're going to get it one way or another. And you say, well, what was all the fuss about, you know? The fact remains that a lot of people just don't know that and are really hating life, not knowing how to handle hate. And if you are at a certain point, you know those other people are you. They're like, you had an extended body and all these were nerve ends on the end of it, you see. However, you know also that you can't really show them anything they don't already know and won't be able to show them anything else until they know it. But then, the question, what shall I do, has now disappeared. It should have disappeared in the beginning, because there wasn't any real I, there was just the happening. And so, that question brings us back again to the experience itself, see? And that's the only way that you can answer the question, is from the experience. You could say, what would happen if? The answer is only, you must feel it, then you will know. And the people who hear about this and say, well, wouldn't everybody become totally callous and impassive? How can you assure me that that wouldn't happen? I say, I can't. But you must get into this state, then you will find out. There's just no you to get into it anyway.
This concludes session 5 of Out of Your Mind, essential listening from the Alan Watts audio archives. Our program continues with session 6. True presents Out of Your Mind, essential listening from the Alan Watts audio archives. Session 6, The Inevitable Ecstasy, Part 2, with Alan Watts.
I was making a basic comparison between the state of consciousness of a baby and that of a so-called mature adult. Respectively, what we would call undifferentiated and differentiated. The adult consciousness being highly selective, and the baby consciousness being very open and hardly selective at all, and therefore unable to distinguish what adults consider to be the important things which have to do with the conventions and rules that the positive aspects, whether they be called good or pleasant or life-giving and so on, must prevail over the negative aspects. And I went on to show that this contrast between the two views of the world has another marked characteristic, that in the case of the baby who hasn't been trained or told about the difference between himself and all that is defined as other than himself, doesn't distinguish between voluntary behavior and involuntary occurrence. And, of course, we think this is a very fundamental defect. But if we go back, you see, to a principle that underlies the whole universe with a kind of mathematical exactitude, we see that if we reduce things to the situation of primal simplicity, and we have a primordial self and other situation, that is to say, two balls in space, there is absolutely no way of telling when they move which one of them is moving, or which one is still. They must necessarily appear to move mutually. There's no point of reference except each other to determine which is moving and which is still. Now, everything that goes on in the universe is simply a complication of that principle, because the same thing holds true if you multiply the number of balls. You'll see that that primordial principle that all movement is mutual still applies. And therefore, the baby's failure to distinguish between the voluntary and the involuntary, the I and the other, is in a way correct. Psychologists, psychoanalysts in particular, make a great deal of this contrast and consider that the baby's view is inferior to the adult's. And if an adult should acquire that view in psychoanalysis, this would be called regression. The point that is missed is that the two ways of looking at things need each other to balance out, and that one needs the baby's view as a basis for the adult view, because if you don't have it, you take the adult view too seriously, get completely carried away by it. And that would be analogous to a person who, in playing poker, loses his nerve because he doesn't realize it's only a game. And so he becomes a very bad player. In exactly the same way, we in life are only playing a game. But because we didn't keep the baby view, we can't see it. So what we would call a Buddha view is one that knows both, and therefore is not taken in by the adult games, although perfectly capable of playing them, but insofar as they are not regarded as finally and absolutely serious, he is not captivated by them. Now, therefore, one asks the question, that sounds very interesting, but how do I recapture the baby point of view? And I showed that that was the wrong question, because it arises entirely and exclusively out of the adult point of view. Because the adult point of view involves the fiction that I exist as an agent independently of everything else that's going on. And so ask, how can I do this? And the important thing is to realize that the feeling of there being this isolated I is part of the game, and it has no fundamental reality except as a convention. And so long as that isn't clear, we're confused. I reiterated the point that when we ask, to whom must it become clear, or to whom is it not clear, that this too was all part of the illusion of the world that the adult presents to the child. So the only way in which the child's vision can come again is in the realization that the I can't do anything about it at all, and can't even do nothing about it. All possibilities of vision for what we call I myself are out. And this, and of course, is the same meaning that the Christian or the Islamic mystics would say, that the mystical experience is the gift of God, and there's nothing you can do to get it. That's a clumsy way, really, of saying the same thing. Because so long as you are trying or not trying, you are aggravating the sensation of the separate ego. Now, that in itself, you see, as I talk about it, presents a certain difficulty. Or one thinks it's difficult. There would be a second difficulty if we were to go on and say, it isn't only the illusion of the ego, but the whole valuation system that we put on the complexity of vibrations we call awareness of life, all the various valuations that are put on this by the social game are maya, that is to say, they are illusory, basically. Because it's only in play, as it were, that we say this is good and this is bad, this is advantageous, this is disadvantageous. And so we would go on to say after this, but I cannot imagine anything more difficult than overcoming that hypnosis. I am so enchanted by this system that the idea of treating it as not really very serious seems to me unthinkable. Of course, you have to think that. It's like a hypnotist working on somebody and saying, you are not going to remember any of this conversation after you come to. And so he's put the suggestion into you that you forget the whole thing. So in the same way, the suggestion has been put into all of us that these rules that we have learned